20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL and the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you for joining me today. It is another fun day in free agency. The Packers make their biggest acquisition yet of this 2026 offseason, picking up Javon Hargrave. That's obviously going to be the primary topic of our show today, but there were also a bunch of little moves, some stuff that happened inside the NFC North. You still have the Trey Hendrickson and Max Crosby chaos that went on. We'll get to all of that today. Before we get there, shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. Six Pack-A-Day, DJ Kenya, Natan Gutierrez, Steve Goldman, Johnny Malezova, Skip Bargaleski, Michael Todd Price, and Dying to Live. Thank you guys so much for signing up and becoming all new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, today is a great day to do so. We always have members-only Q&As every single week, plus some bonus content every now and again, so make sure to check those out. Now, as I mentioned, our main topic for today is Javon Hargrave. This is a very interesting signing. This was a very poorly kept secret. This was a huge rumor for, I would say, probably a week, almost a couple weeks now, is that once Javon Hargrave was released, that Green Bay was going to have interest in signing him. Of course, he has experience playing in Jonathan Gannon's defense. We'll talk about that today. And Green Bay needed some size and some depth and some talent along their defensive line in a fairly significant way. And we've also talked about I think everyone is probably sick of the word comp pick by now. I get it. I understand it. But you've gotten to the point in free agency where there's not really a defensive tackle or a nose tackle that makes a ton of sense, especially if you're going to counterfeit one of your fifth round picks. So if you're going to sign a DJ Reader, if you're going to sign a Daquan Jones, that's great. You can sign. They still could, but just know you're going to relinquish a fifth round pick by doing so. And if that's what's going to happen, you'd probably rather have a player that was released, somebody like a Javon Hargrave. And that's exactly what they did today. Now, there is a different connotation between a DJ Reader and a Daquan Jones and a Javon Hargrave, which we're going to get to today. But this type of signing made a ton of sense all along for Green Bay. Like I said, it was something that's been rumored for some time now. And it was interesting because Minnesota could not release Javon Hargrave until today. And they released him. And it was what? I mean, half an hour at most, and he was signed with Green Bay. And that's why I say this was something that had been rumored and whispered about for some time now. As soon as he was released, Green Bay picked him up. 2-year, $23 million deal. Well, let's go over all the details of Javon Hargrave. And I was able to watch actually a decent amount of tape of him today, so we can go over some of those scouting notes as well. He is 6'2", 307. Of course, a defensive tackle coming over from the Minnesota Vikings. He just turned 33 in February. You heard that right. Just turned 33 in February. This is the Packers' second 30 or over addition this offseason. Of course, you know, Zaire Franklin was the first one, and now Javon Hargrave is the second one. Goodbye, youngest team in the league. Green Bay starting to add some 30-plus-year-old players to this team, adding an influx of veterans and just experience to this defense. I don't think they had a choice. I think if they could have added a 25, 26-year-old that does the same thing that Javon Hargrave does, they would have loved to have done that. Same thing at linebacker, but you only have so many, you know, avenues to upgrade your roster. They're a little bit tight against the cap. They don't have a first-round pick. And so beggars at some point can't be choosers. You have to get what you can get. And Green Bay also, again, I know you're sick of it, but going back to the comp picks, by signing Hargrave doesn't count against the comp pick formula. And by trading for Zaire Franklin doesn't count against the comp pick formula. So that's another reason why Green Bay is probably dabbling in some of these markets that they usually don't dabble with, just because that's the reality that they are living in at this moment, I should say. This is his 11th year in the league. As I mentioned, he gets a 2-year, $23 million deal, had a 68.0 PFF grade this past year on 537 snaps. His 4 years prior, he had a 60.6 grade, 74.9, 80.1, and 67.3. Remember, PFF average is 60, so he's been above average in each of the last 5 years. Those last 2 years that I mentioned, the 80.1 and the 67.3, that's when he was in Philly in a couple really massive seasons for him playing with Jonathan Gannon. He had 31 total pressures this past year, 4 sacks, 3 hits, 24 hurries, 28 tackles, 20 stops, 1 forced fumble, and 2 penalties. He only had two missed tackles and has a career missed tackle percentage of only 6.8%. So you don't see him miss tackles very often. He has 386 career pressures and 58 career sacks per PFF. Before anyone gets mad at me this time, PFF does sacks differently. So I think, I forget who I was talking about, but I was talking about somebody that was on the Packers recently and I quoted their sack numbers and somebody was like, oh, you're just making numbers up. No, I'm using PFF for these and they equate sacks differently. So if you're going out there and seeing, oh, I only see Javon Hargrave with this many sacks, well, it could be different because PFF calculates them. PFF basically doesn't do half sacks. So they are rounding everything up. They don't punish the player because somebody else got there at the same time. They're giving them credit for a full sack most of the time in those situations. So that's why there might be a little bit of a difference there. But per PFF, 386 career pressures with 58 career sacks. Now, as far as defensive tackles go or interior defensive linemen go, per PFF, he was the 36th highest graded interior defensive lineman this past year. So while, you know, that 68.0 grade may not seem like anything, you know, crazy or, oh my God, he's still 36th overall for interior defenders. And, you know, you think about it this way, you're going to have at least two starting interior defenders, right? And there's 32 teams in the league. So he is a top tier number two interior defensive lineman, which is fine for Green Bay. You've got Devontae Wyatt, who graded actually well below that, but Devontae Wyatt's going to be one of your primary ones. Hargrave's going to be one of your primary ones. And as we'll talk about in just a little bit, they're still going to be searching for at least one more player on that interior defensive line. Like I said, we'll talk about that coming up. But that 36th graded defensive tackle spot or interior defensive lineman spot, that was ahead of Kenny Clark, Logan Hall, who just signed a free agent deal, Oso Digizua, who just got traded for a third round pick from Dallas to San Francisco, A'shaun Robinson, who just signed a 1-year, $7 million deal, and then John Franklin Myers. John Franklin Myers, who got what, 20 mil? I don't know if it was 20 mil, but it was a crazy free agent deal. And per PFF, Hargrave was ahead of him. Now, we should always take those again for, you know, face value, grain of salt, whatever you want to say. It's not the be all end all, but it's a range of that. They're in a similar trajectory of player, at least based on PFF's grades. He was 17th among interior defensive linemen in pass rush win percentage, which is a great number. And he was 11th in true pass set win percentage, which means when you're actually dropping back to pass, there's not a play action, there's not a screen, there's not a whatever. When you're actually going back in a 5 to 7 step drop and the offensive lineman has to protect and you can go and actually hunt the quarterback, he was the 11th best interior defender in pass set win rate. That's a really high number. And this is something that Hargrave kind of complained about a little bit, at least in a roundabout way. We'll talk about that. And remember this number. We'll talk about it when we get there as well. But this shows that when he actually can go hunt, he is still hunting from an interior defensive lineman perspective at a very high level. Now, one of the other talking points here is just how good he was with Jonathan Gannon in Philly. Those 2 years, 21 and 22, in 2021 in Philly, he had 63 pressures with a 91.6 pass rush grade per PFF that year. And in 2022, 66 pressures with a 91.1 pass rush grade in 2022. So a total of 129 pressures in 2 years in Philly with Jonathan Gannon there. And if you're wondering why Jonathan Gannon probably was going to bat for bringing Hargrave to Green Bay, you can bet that this was a huge reason why. Also, just as an aside, Zach Cruz pointed this one out. Rashawn Gary this past year had 8 quick pressures as a primary defensive end, a primary pass rusher, 8 quick pressures in 2025. Javon Hargrave, as an interior defensive lineman with fewer snaps than Rashawn Gary and a lot fewer pass rush opportunities, had 11 quick pressures. So we had 3 more quick pressures than Rashawn Gary, who was in more of a pass rushing role. Something to think about there as well. As far as the film goes, like I said, I was able to get to, I got, I think, four games done, which is not bad. And actually, I went through, I think, 2 of the ones that had the most snaps in them as well. But either way, the first thing that I watched was the Chicago game from week 1 a year ago. And that's the game that had me salivating of that you could really see what he could bring to the table. And it didn't really hold up in some of the other games that I watched. There were moments, but you could see he came out pretty motivated in that week 1 game against Chicago. And I'm excited to watch all of the tape eventually when I go through and grade all this. But some of the other games, it didn't quite have the pizzazz that that game had against Chicago. But I really liked his ability to reset the line of scrimmage. If you're not familiar what that means, line of scrimmage is here. Offensive linemen and defensive linemen are going to start colliding towards each other. Who wins that battle? If you're resetting the line of scrimmage, it means that the defensive lineman is taking where the initial line of scrimmage started and pushing it back and back and back into the quarterback. And so he's into the running back. And he's resetting that line of scrimmage, pushing it back further, basically, again, getting pressure. Even if that offensive lineman's between the running back and the quarterback, he's resetting that line, okay? You saw that on tape on multiple occasions, especially early in the year and especially in that Chicago game. What I really like, and let's just cut to the chase in a pretty major talking point here. What you need to do when you are watching him is watch his pad level, not to get all Mike McCarthy pad level on you, but when he plays low to the ground and when he plays with really good pad level, he is really freaking good. And I mean, really freaking good. That's when you see him resetting the line of scrimmage. That's when you see him jackknifing people into the backfield. That's when you see him splitting double teams. That's when you see him holding up at the point of attack. It's a pretty simple thing for Hargrave. He gets low, he wins. At 6'2", 307, good strength, great size, great agility. He gets low, he's going to win. This is classic low man wins, but it is almost to the nth degree with Hargrave. And when you see him get up and offensive linemen can get their hands into his pads, he's going to lose that rep. And that to some extent is the name of the game, right? Low man wins or who gets their hands in the other man's pads first. That's all common stuff. But with Hargrave, it really truly feels if he gets low and he can jackknife you, it's game over. He's going to win. And if he's high and you get your hands in on his pads, you can move him, manipulate him a whole heck of a lot more. So pad level, pad level, pad level. When he wins in a significant way. And when he doesn't, you're going to beat him. It's kind of as simple as that. But when he does play with good pad level, he is a really impressive force along the interior of the defensive line. We'll be right back. So I remember the very first time that drinking hit me differently. I was drinking responsibly the night before and we had young kids at the time and I woke up with my son crying in bed and just didn't feel right. It was a very harsh reminder that after the age of 30, even responsibly drinking alcohol will make you feel less than 100% the next day. The more I looked into it, the more I realized that even a few alcoholic drinks will crush your sleep and your next day readiness. That's why I'm obsessed with Cheers Restore. Cheers Restore is a dual action after alcohol aid. Its ingredients support both your brain and your liver after consuming alcohol. Cheers was originally invented by a student at Princeton and was designed for how alcohol actually affects your body, not just dehydration. And you don't have to just take my word for it. Cheers has appeared on Shark Tank and is sold in over 30,000 stores, and they've already sold over 50 million doses. And Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians who share it with their patients. Cheers' promise is simple. All you do is take 3 capsules after your last drink or before bed, and you'll feel about 50% better the next day or your money back. That's why it's same night out, way better morning with Cheers. For a limited time, our listeners are getting 20% off their entire order by using code PACKADAY at cheershealth.com. Just head to cheershealth.com and use code PACKADAY for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that PACKADAY sent you. He will keep working through a play. So even if he gets shut down early, he doesn't shut down. He continues to work throughout the course of the play. You love his size and agility combination. He's got a good first step. He's quick, he's agile, and for somebody at 6'2", 307, it's not what it used to be in the prime of his career, but he's still in a pretty rare category of just guys that size that move in a unique way. Even at this stage of his career, Hargrave is still very much in that conversation. He has the ability to collapse a pocket. He can split double teams as a pass rusher. There were multiple plays that I saw on tape, even just in the 4 games that I watched, where he got double teamed and was able to split in between them and still get into the backfield and get a pressure. That is a rare trait that does not happen very often for very many defensive linemen. Hargrave has the ability to do it. As mentioned, he's got a good first step off the line of scrimmage. He will struggle against double teams in run defense. If he gets double teamed, you will see him get sort of crashed out of the gap and it opens up some running lanes. And even just in general, the run defense leaves a lot to be desired. He is not a high-end run defender. He can hang. And again, when he plays with good pad level, he can hang very well. And I've even seen him hold up against double teams, but it's nowhere near consistent. And so this is where I go back to, what have we talked about Green Bay really needing? A run-stuffing nose tackle is what they need. They did not get that with Javon Hargrave. Can he moonlight as a nose tackle in a 3-4 every now and again for like a play or two per game? Yes. And if he's motivated and he handles those plays well, you're going to be fine. But do you want to make any sort of habit out of him playing that spot? You really, truly don't. And certainly not on rundowns. So this is a Colby Wooden replacement. This is not your answer to, did you find a nose tackle? Or at least the answer to that question is no, you did not. At least not a full-time one. He is a pass rush, hunting mentality defensive tackle or interior defensive lineman. That's what he wants to do. He wants to go hunt and penetrate. He actually had been a really good fit in Jeff Hafley's defense, if I'm being honest. He'll still be a good fit here in Jonathan Gannon's defense, which again, as he has shown in his time with Jonathan Gannon in Philly, he fits very well. But he is a penetrating defensive tackle who wants to get upfield and either make a play in the backfield or go get the quarterback. And he mentioned, which we're going to talk about, he didn't really like what his role was in Minnesota. He's going to get the opportunity to do more of that. The last but not least, the last thing I saw on tape was there were some empty calories and some just disappearances for stretches of time. And that was as the season went along a little bit more. That first game, like I said, against Chicago, he looked very motivated, made quite a few plays in that game. But as the season wore on, and maybe it was due to him not liking his role in Minnesota, maybe it was because the team was atrocious in the middle of the season and they weren't winning anything, whatever it might be, you did get more games and more plays as the season went on that it just felt like, is Hargrave going to do anything? Is he going to go make a play? And it just felt like he's there, but he's not really making an impact. And I will say there was an unselfishness to his play. It wasn't always about Javon Hargrave. He didn't get to hunt as much in that defense. So he was kind of taking on blocks at times or letting other people do some of the sexy work while he was doing some of the dirty work. So there was definitely a piece of that as well. But there were stretches of time where you're like, you're watching play after play after play after play, and you're like, oh, this is pretty boring. Hargrave's not doing a whole heck of a lot. And that will come across, I think, as you kind of watch him, I'm sure, throughout the course of the year for swatches of time where you're just waiting for him to do a little bit more. As mentioned, he retweeted a tweet of, I forget who it was that said it, but basically to paraphrase here, somebody tweeted something out saying something to the extent of, hey, if you want to be a really good pass rusher at defensive tackle, do not go to Brian Flores' defense because you're not going to be able to do what you want to do. And he retweeted that. And apparently, I know I was listening to a little clip from Thor Nystrom, who covers the Vikings as well. Apparently, this is something that Hargrave was not shy about throughout the course of the season. And so the question here is, as Packers fans, we're of course hoping that what he did in Minnesota was only a portion of what he can do, that in a different scheme and with going back to Jonathan Gannon, that he's going to be able to do a whole heck of a lot more. So is it legitimate that he wasn't used the right way as a pass rusher? Or is this sort of a hope or cope from Packers fans saying, yeah, he's going to come over in this new system and he's going to take off? I think the answer is a little bit of both. Think back to Brian Flores' defense, okay? This is a defense that there's a lot of simulated pressures, a lot of double A-gap sort of looks. And what is Brian Flores trying to accomplish? Think about this clearly. Brian Flores, with all of that crazy simulated pressures and twists and stunts and double A gap blitzes and guys coming off the edge and, seven man lines where you don't know who's going to be blitzing and who's not going to be blitzing. The goal in all of that is to confuse the offense and is to get a free rusher, get somebody that's going to get an immediate rush lane to the quarterback without getting picked up. That all that eye candy, all of the, different, simulated pressures, that's all to likely get a free rusher in some way, shape, or form, or a pass rusher, Andrew Van Ginkel or a Dallas Turner, a Grenard on a running back or on a tight end, an easy winnable matchup. That's what he's trying to do. What it's not conducive to is a lot of one-on-ones with defensive tackles or trying to set up the defensive tackle to be that free rusher. Because if you're going to get a free rusher, do you want it to be your 307-pound guy? Or do you want it to be a corner, safety, linebacker, or speedy edge rusher that can easily beeline to the quarterback? You want it to be the guy that can easily beeline to the quarterback, right? So Flores is not using, you know, Javon Hargrave and Jonathan Allen and these players to get those free rushes to the quarterback. They're using them as decoys or guys that are going to pick off other players so that you might get somebody swinging around and getting a free rush to the quarterback, somebody that can get there faster than your 300-plus pound defensive tackles. So yes, I do legitimately think that the defense was not set up in obvious passing downs for Javon Hargrave to do what he does best, which is go hunt the quarterback. Just get a one-on-one in front of you, beat the guy in front of you, and go get the QB. Wasn't really set up for that. I do also think that it's a little bit of an oversimplification. At some point in time, you are a defensive tackle and you've got an offensive lineman in front of you and you have the ability to go beat that offensive lineman and go get to the quarterback. While there were times where Hargrave did it, in the last couple of years, he hasn't done it at the same level that he did earlier in his career. I do think Father Time is showing up a little bit here. Doesn't have the same burst, doesn't have quite the same juice. So to think that, you know, he's just going to all of a sudden go back to playing with Jonathan Gannon, we're going to start seeing 60 plus pressures and a bunch of sacks again, I don't think that that's going to be the case. But I do think he's going to fit better and be allowed to go hunt more often in Green Bay than he was in Minnesota. I think Hargrave's going to like that because that's truly the player that he has made, that he's made to be. It's not sort of setting everyone else up. Even though he did a good job of being unselfish, he wants to go hunt. And I do think Jonathan Gannon's going to go allow him to do that a whole heck of a lot more this year than what he was able to in Minnesota last year. Then the next question becomes, well, can he be what he was in Philly? Can he become that guy again? What I will say is, you know, I like the scheme fit. I think it does make sense. But that was 4 or 5 years ago that he was doing that. He's not the same player. He was on a great defense. And there's one other little helping hand he had. He had Fletcher Cox next to him. And if you don't remember 21, 22 Fletcher Cox, that was one of the best defensive players in football, or at least defensive lineman in football. He was phenomenal. He got a lot of extra, you know, offensive line attention, meaning Fletcher Cox, which allowed Hargrave to go be that guy, be the guy that got a lot of one-on-ones. That was a huge advantage as well. So if you're expecting, again, these 66, you know, pressures in a season, I wouldn't hold your breath. But I do think it can be more than what it was in Minnesota a season ago. What I would say is where your overall stance is on Hargrave and whether you think he can come in and be a legitimate big time presence or not, what I will tell you is based off of the tape that I saw and the PFF grades and the metrics and the win rates and anything else you want to look at, this is a legitimate upgrade from Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, Warren Brinson, and those players that were playing next to, you know, Devontae Wyatt a year ago. And in fact, I don't think he's that far off from Devontae Wyatt as a player. I think he can do a lot of the things that Devontae Wyatt does. I think you're getting another version of that in Javon Hargrave. So he is a legitimate upgrade from those players. Now, you guys know I liked Colby Wooden this past year. I liked what he brought to the table. And I liked what Carl Brooks did in his rookie year, but I would say Hargrave is a legitimate step up from either of those, even in their best seasons in Green Bay. And so you are adding a legitimate player next to Devontae Wyatt, who is unquestionably going to help the interior of this defensive line. The question becomes, how do you utilize him? Here's how I would do it. And again, we don't know for sure if this is going to be a 4-3 or a 3-4 or something in between or a hybrid defense. We don't know that yet. If it's a 4-3, it's easy. I do think you can play some Hargrave and Wyatt together, you know, LVN and Parsons on the outside. I think you can go with that. You probably want somebody a little bit more run stuffing and then kind of rotate Wyatt and Hargrave on early downs and then have both of those guys out there on later downs. But if we are talking 3-4, you still need a nose tackle. Right now, it's Jonathan Ford, who they brought back. We'll talk about that. And then, you know, you've got, you know, Nazir Stackhouse. You don't have much at that nose tackle spot. And as mentioned, do I think Hargrave can play there a few snaps per game? Sure, but you don't want it being his full-time role. So you need a nose tackle, and then you're probably going to have Wyatt, and you're probably going to have Hargrave next to him in your starting 3-4 defense. You may not even want that because, you know, Hargrave and Wyatt, they're not like stellar players against the run. So maybe Brinson and Brooks and some others get a few more snaps there as well. And you save Hargrave and Wyatt primarily for when you go with that 4-man line and Hargrave is then your nose tackle in that 4-man front on obvious passing downs with Wyatt as your 3 technique and then Micah and LVN as your edge players. That's where you want to utilize him. As a pass down, pass rush specialist, and a little bit as 3-4 defensive end with maybe a couple of snaps here and there as a nose tackle in a 3-4. Can do a little bit of it all, but where you really want him is on obvious passing downs, getting after the quarterback. That's where he can be utilized best. And I do think, I tweeted this out, I know some people are skeptical, and it's fair to say, we'll believe it when we see it. If these players are healthy and playing well, the line of LVN, Hargrave, Wyatt, and Parsons, I do think fits together very well. And the reason I say that, what happened a lot of times last year with Micah, besides getting held on every play, Micah would win quick, get around the edge, and then what would happen is the other 3 players weren't winning consistently enough. And then the quarterback would just step up in the pocket. Now Micah vacated a spot where the tackle kind of pushed him out of the picture after getting that immediate win, or he got double teamed, whatever. And then the quarterback steps up into the pocket, then steps right where Micah was, and now has time to throw. Or at minimum, Micah would get there and the quarterback could just step up in the pocket and check it down because the other players weren't winning. But what I like is that Wyatt and Hargrave are going to not only penetrate, but they can push that pocket on the interior, and LVN can bull rush from the other side. And if those 3 can just collapse that pocket and cause some pressure, which they're all good at doing, and now Micah can win quick, that quarterback's not going to have anywhere to go. And that's going to result in Micah becoming more weaponized and more problematic because that quarterback doesn't have the opportunity to step up and go anywhere. I'm with you. Let's see what it looks like when they get out there and if it can actually be what it looks as good as it looks on paper. But I do think LVN, Hargrave, Wyatt, and Parsons have the ability to be a very good pass rush group if they're playing healthy and at the peak of their levels. Excited about that line. We'll be right back. Another veteran addition. Again, crazy that they've now brought in a 30-year-old linebacker and a 4-year-old defensive tackle. It's not the 33-year-old defensive tackle. That's not the Green Bay way of doing things, but they are getting a little bit more veteran on that side of the ball. And I think, again, it was necessary. I think it was needed. And I do think it's going to help out some of those younger players on the defensive line. The question is going to be, was he worth the money? 2 years, 23. I talked about this with Justice a couple days ago when we were talking about cut candidates, because I think a lot of people were expecting Hargrave to get released, which he did. And then because he got released, well, this is going to be like a 1-year, $5 million deal or 1-year, $4 million. No chance. These defensive tackles go quick and they go for big money. I was expecting either like a 1-year, $10 million deal or a 2-year, $20 million deal, always something in that range. And so we got 2 years, 23. I probably would still have very much considered that for Green Bay. Is it a little on the pricey side? A little, but I'm going to hold anything before, or at least until we get the final numbers and the final contract to see what it looks like. Once we get that, we can break it down a little bit more. But my initial reaction is a little bit on the pricey side. I wish it was like 2 years, 16. That would have been ideal. Even 2 years, 18. 2 years, 23 is probably just a little bit on the aggressive side. But they were out of options to add a good player to this defensive line. There just wasn't much else out there. So Green Bay probably had to upgrade that price a little bit, especially with it not costing them a comp pick. This was a good move. And that's kind of my last thing here is, was it a good signing? I think so. It was the right player at the right time for the right reasons, who fits the scheme, who can give them some pass rush, needs to be better against the run, but they needed the size, they needed the strength, they needed the versatility, they needed the depth, they needed all of it. And Hargrave was somebody that can give it to them. And I think even at a higher level from what he played in Minnesota a year ago. So yes, I do think this is a good signing. I like it. I'm a fan of it. I like the tape overall. Needs to not disappear for some of those stretches. But when he's playing well, he's playing very, very well. And I do think, you know, Jonathan Gannon has the ability to unlock a little bit more of Javon Hargrave. I would just say set realistic expectations. if you're expecting this to be a massive signing who's going to completely change the way that Green Bay plays on the interior, I don't think you're going to get that. But do I think he can come in and be a, you know, somewhat of an impact player and an upgrade for Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden and Warren Brinson and those players that were playing next to Wyatt a year ago? Yes, but you do still need a nose tackle and somebody who can come in and give you some real beef on the interior and really help you stop the run. Right now, they are still missing that player. What I will also just add here is Green Bay is banking a little bit on these players, meaning Hargrave and Franklin specifically, to bounce back from years where they didn't quite hit the mark where they were, their teams respectively were hoping them to hit. Hargrave less so. Hargrave still had a nice year, but not to the level Minnesota was expecting. Franklin had his worst year, and certainly that was not what Indianapolis was expecting. Green Bay is hoping in a new scheme, in a change of scenery, and you know, just all of that, that they can come back and play much better than they did a season ago. If they do that, great. But Green Bay is taking a little bit of a chance. I would say with those two, I'd also say Aaron Banks to a little bit of that extent too. But these are big contract signings that Green Bay is going to have to find a way to make work and hope that they can be better than what they overall performed at a year ago in Minnesota and Indianapolis, respectively. Meanwhile, we've got some other news and notes surrounding the team. Brenton Cox re-signs with the team. This is something that Justice broke about a day and a half ago now. A one-year, $2.5 million deal for Brenton Cox. Good deal there. We'll see what the final numbers look like, how much is guaranteed. This is probably a player who still has to earn his spot in training camp, but a great deal for somebody that you add to the 90-man roster right now that will come in and have to earn his spot. And I do think there's a very good chance that he breaks the 53-man roster in initial cutdowns and stays on the roster for probably the entirety of 2026, but at minimum makes that initial 53-man roster. And I'm just kind of going in chronological order now on the day. Then we had Aaron Jones re-sign with the Vikings. He takes a pay cut, goes back to Minnesota. Hate that. Good for Jones, I guess, but would have liked to see him go somewhere else. I don't think he was ever going to be back in Green Bay, to be clear, but was hoping it was going to be somewhere other than Minnesota. But unfortunately, he stays with the Vikings. Green Bay then brought back Jonathan Ford. 1 year, $1.5 million. Only $100,000 in signing bonus. This is very much a, here's $100,000. Come try out with us in camp, and we'll see if you can make it. He's going to get $100,000 no matter what. That's his guarantee. That's his bonus. But he's going to have to earn it in camp. Right now, nose tackle looks pretty good for him. Just him and Nasir Stackhouse. But yeah, I can guarantee you right now, he's going to get more competition, and he's going to have to earn that spot. Even though they brought him back today on a $1.5 million deal with $100,000 signing bonus, that is no lock to make the team whatsoever. Green Bay then brought back Josh Wiley at tight end. Good pickup here. You've got Tucker Kraft coming back from injury. You've got Luke Musgrave. And then Josh Wiley's probably that third guy right now. Fitzpatrick's probably not going to be back. Wouldn't surprise me if they drafted somebody. But for now, again, 90-man roster time, I like the idea to bring back Josh Wiley. He looked pretty good at times last year, like that he could be a legitimate number two tight end. He wasn't quite there last year, but he showed signs of it. So I don't mind that signing at all from Green Bay, or re-signing, I should say. We then had the Rashawn Gary trade go official. While normally that's not a big deal, it felt like a little bit bigger deal with the whole Max Crosby thing looming large. And if Dallas would get Crosby, would they back out of the Gary trade? Not anymore. The Gary trade is finalized. He is a Cowboy. Green Bay does in fact get that fourth round pick. Zane Anderson then left Green Bay and is going to Green Bay South, the Miami Dolphins. Jeff Hafley there. You have Ryan Downard, the safeties coach or defensive backs coach. He's also down there. They clearly like Zane Anderson. Zane Anderson might start in Miami. If you go and look at what Miami has in their secondary right now, it is a pretty brutal scene. Their safeties, Ifeatu Melifonwu and Ashton Davis, are both free agents. Rasul Douglas and Kadir Kohu, their corners, are both free agents. Their next corner, Jack Jones, free agent. Artie Burns, free agent. Elijah Campbell, free agent. They did sign Lonnie Johnson, but if right now you were putting this team together, Zane Anderson and Lonnie Johnson are probably your starting safeties. Storm Duck, yes, Storm Duck, that's a real name, and Juju Brents, what a great combo, are probably your starting corners. So you're going Juju Brents and Storm Duck as your starting corners with Zane Anderson and Lonnie Johnson as your starting safeties. That's the current state of affairs in the Dolphins secondary. So good on Zane Anderson. He gets a contract with Miami, and he legitimately right now would be the starter at safety. Might stay that way too. So good for him. Yosh Nyman retired. Green Bay's former swing tackle was recently with Carolina. Surprising, he's not that old, and there are a lot of teams that need swing tackles. So I'm a little bit surprised that he did, but good on him. If he felt it was time to call it quits, he did so. So Yosh Nyman out of the league. Still no Rashid Walker deal. I talked about this. My only hypothesis here is that he has a number in mind, whether it's 20 mil per year, 21, 22, whatever that number is, he has it in mind. He is staying firm. His agency is staying firm. And until somebody comes to that number and gives them what they want, he's being patient with it. He's very clearly the top player left in the market. There's not much left, but Rashid is one of them. And I expect this to get done soon, probably by end of the week. But right now it seems like Rashid is holding out for a specific number. And until he gets it, maybe he has that patience to kind of wait it out a little bit longer. We did get a little bit more of a resolution to the Max Crosby situation. Crosby is going to be a Raider, apparently. Crosby posted out, I think it was on Instagram, that he's ready to go with the Raiders. He's going back. He's ready to play. And he's excited about it. So crazy turn of events there. That would be best case scenario, by the way, that they don't trade him. You don't want him going to Philly. You don't want him going to Chicago. You don't want him going to Detroit. You don't want him going to the Rams or San Francisco or anything like that. Stay with the Raiders. That'd be great. That'd be a great outcome. And then meanwhile, Trey Hendrickson does go to the Ravens. So that's a crazy conspiracy situation, right? But he does in fact go to the Ravens. Another player that could have signed with an NFC team stays in the AFC. You love to see that as well. Signs continue to point to Kyler Murray being the Vikings quarterback. We'll keep an eye on that through the remainder of this week. And then the biggest news, the biggest free agent signee, Ross Uglum will be back officially with the Daily Draft. I don't know his exact first date, if it's going to be this week still, or if he's going to start on Monday. I had to assume, my guess is he probably starts next Monday with a mock draft Monday. But Ross Uglum will be back very shortly for probably about the next 2 months with the Daily Draft. Really excited about that. So welcome back, Ross, and get excited for a lot more content hitting your feed. Not only a daily episode from me, but usually a daily episode from Ross as well, talking all things NFL draft as I take the next, 50 days or so to get caught up on all things NFL draft. And I'm going through and watching as many prospects as I can. I don't have the ability usually to do that and talk a main topic every day and talk draft picks every day. So that's where Ross comes in. Like I said, the great free agent signee that is Ross Uglum. He should be back in your feeds, both on the audio channel and on the video channel very, very soon. That, my friends, is what I have for you today. Big signing. I do think Javon Hargrave is probably going to be their biggest move of this offseason, but never say never. You never know what Brian Gutekunst is going to pull off. And at this point last year, we didn't even have dreams of Micah Parsons dancing in our head, much less the actual trade coming true. As I did joke about, I will be in Illinois next weekend. Last time I stepped foot in Illinois, the Packers immediately traded for Micah Parsons. So I'm going to do my part, see if I can trigger something big next weekend, not this coming weekend, but the following weekend. So I'll see what I can do for you guys. That's all for me today. Thank you so much again for joining me. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Ritaka, Jason Rimmon, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkelstinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Richard Morales, Les Nino, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Steve Bates, John Mark Liddell, Nemo, Donald Decker, Damon Hartley, Zilch Zillertson, Large Charles, Jake Kohner, and Will Glass. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Out.